be on extended leave for next year. He's only interning first term 2015. So in the interim, we have to elect an acting chairperson for the committee. In terms of MC Rules 92, if the chairperson of a committee or subcommittee is absent or unable to perform the functions of the chairperson, the committee or subcommittee may elect another of its members as acting chairperson unless these rules provide otherwise in a specific case. An acting chairperson performs the functions and may exercise the powers of the chairperson. The procedure to follow would be the same as was when we elected the chairpersons, when we constituted the Select Committee on Land and Mineral Resources at the beginning of the Parliament. I now put to the floor for any nominations for the chairperson of the Select Committee on Land and Mineral Resources, Mrs. Prince. Honorable Khai has been nominated, proposed by Honorable Prince. I recognize Mr. Nyambi.
Thank you. I second the name of Honorable Khai.
The nomination of Mr. Khai has been seconded by Mr. Nyambi. Are there any further nominations? In light of no further nominations, I now hand over to the acting chairperson of the Select Committee on Land and Mineral Resources, Mr. Khai. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Charles, and the honorable members. I'm not going to make an acceptance speech because it's a temporary arrangement. It's not a permanent arrangement. We will now, without wasting any time, because we had some delay in terms of starting the meeting, because some members were engaged in other meetings. Now that we correct, we can continue with the meeting. Perhaps the first will be to introduce ourselves, as it was indicated during the process, the previous process of nomination. My name is Manta Isaacai. I'm a member of this committee representing the Eastern Cape.
My name is Pelbakis. I'm a member of the committee. Goes.
Ellen Prince, member of the committee.
Richard Sango, member of the committee.
Smith, representing Mpapa.
Kathy Abiskahi, good morning from the Basin Act.
Anthony Sifi from the Agricultural Ministry.
Good morning, my name is Jilo Matthias, representing the Northern Cape.
Morning, Jomo Nyambi from Mpumalanga province.
Can you sing it for the province of KwaZulu-Natal?
Thank you, Honorable Members. Can we then allow the departments? Don't see the ministers, but I do in front of me have an apology for the Deputy Minister of Environmental Affairs, but also in terms of the members of the committee, there is an apology for Honorable Kayla. Can we hand over to the leaders of the delegation from this side?
Thank you.
President, good morning, and honorable members. Mutsuma Manya is my name. I'm the Deputy Director General in the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, responsible for fisheries management. and I would want to apologize for the Director General, Professor Fisher, who is in the other committee.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Alfred Wills. I'm a Deputy Director General in the Department of Environment. My apologies for my Director General, who's unfortunately detained. I don't know, Chair, whether you want us to introduce the delegation. I have Zabul here from the Office of the Director General.
Good morning. My name is Ryan Peter. I'm with the Chief Director of Integrated Coastal Management, the Oceans and Coastal Branch of DIA.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Ryan Azak. I am the legal support at the Department of Environmental Affairs.
Good morning. I'm Lilalam Daoud, Department of Environmental Affairs.
Good morning to the committee. My name is Yazi. I'm the Director for Coastal Pollution Management, and I'm from the Ranch Oceans and Coast Environmental Affairs. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Members. Guy Preston. I'm from Environmental Affairs as well. I'm looking at biosecurity here.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Aspanda Njobeni from the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Egan Ali. I'm from the Branch Fisheries, Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries.
Good morning. My name is Kuba Jista. I'm the researcher for the committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Azza Bauer. I'm the committee secretary for the Select Committee on Land and Mineral Resources.
Good morning. My name is Deshni Pai. I'm the content advisor.
Good morning. I'm Matilda Letabo. I am the PA for Mr.
Thank you very much. Last time we commended the Department of Agriculture and Forestry and Fisheries for please bringing both the minister and deputy minister. I'm sure that the deputy minister is coming. Already we have an apology for the Department of Environmental Affairs. Without wasting any time, we'll allow the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. I will start with the Environmental Affairs first. Okay. What is this? Agriculture. Oh, can we allow agriculture to start first? Over to the DG.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have two presentations. The one presentation deals with the aquaculture development zones, and we have picked up the number of the zones in the various provinces. And the other presentation deals with and this is the presentation that we have at the moment, that deals with the environment that regulates, that guides the aquaculture development. The outline, as indicated, I will not, I don't want to take a lot of your time, but in terms of the regulatory environment. The then Department of DIT, where fisheries was at the time, was mandated for regulation and management of the marine aquaculture. And when the long-term rights were allocated, the issuing of the permits also was provided for. Both rights and the permit were provided for under the Marine Living Resources Act. And that dealt with the marine aquaculture, and the freshwater aquaculture was with the then Department of Agriculture, which took care of both the regulation and the management of the freshwater aquaculture. And this was done also jointly with the provincial competent authorities. In the majority of cases, this was the provincial departments of agriculture. In 2006, the policy for the development of sustainable freshwater aquaculture sector in South Africa was developed. And at the moment, DAF, or the Department of Agriculture, is a responsible department for both marine and freshwater aquaculture. And at the moment where we are, the DAF does not as yet have an enabling legislation to regulate the freshwater aquaculture. The Marine Living Resources Act is still being used for the marine aquaculture. The sector is governed by several pieces of legislation and policies. Unfortunately, that is spread between the various organs of state, and as a result, this is seen as not necessarily enabling but hampering the process in agriculture development. There are a number of other challenges, including perception of over-regulation, that the institutional frameworks are not coordinated, the authorization processes also scattered. The aquaculture sector has been identified as a growing sector, and therefore it has become a priority sector in a number of government policies. And I have indicated in slide number 5 a number of aspects of pieces of legislation. And you can see that if one must develop aquaculture, he'll have to knock several doors, which might take much longer for one to ultimately establish the aquaculture. In terms of DAF, there are several components, and I've shown that in the next slide, how we are organized to provide the support for aquaculture development, ranging from development, providing technical support, policy development, and aquaculture research. In terms of the intervention to date in creating an enabling environment, in 2011, a national aquaculture strategic framework was developed. And from that strategic framework, a number of other developments followed. We have developed a national aquaculture policy framework, which was approved in 2013. An aquaculture research and development, aquaculture research and technology development program, was approved in 2012, and also the aquaculture Animal Health Strategic Framework was also approved, and that ensure addresses the aquatic animals' health issues. We've undertaken a review of various pieces of legislation in 2013, and out of that study, there was a recommendation that there is a need to develop an aquaculture act, and at the moment we are working through a process to develop the aquaculture bill. There has been also a concept document that has been developed for aquaculture development zones. We have together with the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations undertook a study on public understanding of aquaculture. And this was completed, and very interesting is that the majority of people, in this case we've indicated the middle income group, 85% of the people have shown the lack of awareness of aquaculture. The consumption also of fish also has been shown to be very low, 8 kilograms per person per annum versus the global average of 19 kilograms. So we still have quite a long way to go. One of the gaps that we have that we also want to address is the development of the inland fisheries policy to ensure that we build a sustainable inland fisheries sector. The environmental impact assessment guidelines for aquaculture were developed, and I'm sure our civil department will report on that, but they've been publicly in consultation with, and we are working together with here on a number of those areas. We have also commissioned biodiversity risk and benefit assessment study on the appropriateness of farming with seven alien and invasive species in the country. DAVES also entered into a memorandum of understanding with the National Regulator for Compulsory Specifications, which is reporting to the DPI, to enable the certification for fish and fisheries products that are destined for export markets. We also working with the universities, and we have the MOU with the 8 universities to promote and advance aquaculture research and development in line with our strategic framework. In collaboration with DIA, we, I'm sure they will report on that, we are working on developing the norms and standards for abalone and trout in the, the priority, and the rest of the other sectors will follow, or species will follow as we go along. In terms of the institutional arrangements we have established the National Aquaculture Intergovernmental Forum, and is consists of a number of national departments, the DGI, Economic Development, the DIA, Department of Health, Science and Technology, Water and Sanitation, and these meetings are meeting quarterly chaired by DAF. We've gone further to establish a provincial Aquaculture Intergovernmental Forum that is made up primarily of the Provincial Department of Agriculture, and in those cases where economic development implements aquaculture, the Economic Development Department will be involved. And these meetings are chaired by DAF, and they're meeting on a biennial basis. We have also organized the staff that the aquaculture value chain round table, and this also meet 3 times in a year to ensure that all the stakeholders who have interest in aquaculture meet together to address the issues within the value chain. There have been environmental authorizations that have been received, and this attached to our collaboration on the with their on the development zones. In terms of capacity building, Chair, one of the scarce areas we will scarce skills is in the aquatic health area, and we are, although we have started the program, but we have a shortage of veterinary aquatic health specialists, and we are recruiting and training to build up capacity. In terms of research, we recognize the need to ensure that there is question and focus on research interventions, and we do need to establish an aquaculture research and technology demonstration center. And this is in addition to the collaborations that we already have with the universities. We do need to promote, as part of enabling and accelerating the enabling environment, make sure that the aquaculture is established in more tertiary institutions. Tomorrow, as the president will be launching the Operation Pakisa, we have developed the plans in identified zones, and then the next presentation has most of those slides that show the various projects. And my apologies, it seems the colors are not very well, but I have included just quickly, Jefferson, the work that we have done to accelerate the agriculture development for the Pakistan. And I'll just proceed to the next slide. In terms of the plan that we have, we're showing what our aspirations are, that we would want to grow the aquaculture sector to, from where it is now, grow it 5 times to 20,000 tons. We are looking forward to increasing employment to 15,000, and we would want to see the aquaculture contributing as much as 3 billion to the national economy. We have identified a number of constraining areas. Regulation is one of them. Accessing financing is another. The limited access to markets, the skills, the infrastructure, research and development as some of the areas that we will need to address. We have also, from that the engagement with a number of stakeholders, both provincial and industry, identified the projects, at least 24 projects were identified. Some of them are new, some of them are at the beginning stages, some of them require some interventions. And that will be one of the things that we'll do as part of our peak wins to implement those projects and unlock their potential. Secondly, one of the plans we have is to address the legislative reforms that are required. Amongst others, also we've agreed between ourselves and other departments to establish an interdepartmental authorizations committee. We are addressing, for export purposes, a globally recognized monitoring and certification system. To address the financing issues, we will be addressing the establishment of the Aquaculture Development Fund. Under the leadership of the Department of Education and Training, we will be doing the capacity building for the skills that are required. And marketing, we are mobilizing the coordination of industry-wide marketing efforts, and we are also engaging the Competition Commission, because in the initial stages of the intervention, we would require the guidance, and also look at the preferential procurement within the government. I've shown on that slide the 24 projects that have been selected. Where they are, these are not necessarily all projects, person to say, but at that stage, the provinces that participated, the information that was available in terms of the plans, included those projects, and you'd see Limpopo, Mpumalanga, the Free State, may seem like they've been left out, but it's purely because the participation has relatively been slow, and we are working with them to catch up to be included.
Thank you, sir.
I'll do it in 5 minutes today because those are just for the exam. Briefly, Chair, I'll talk to the agriculture development zones, what are the benefits are from there. I'll run through quickly the various projects that we have. In terms of the agriculture development zones, and that's where I basically want to start, that we're looking at an area or a soil site that may be on land or on the sea that is set aside exclusively for aquaculture development. And the zone, because it has a number of issues, and primarily that we could develop the bulk infrastructure that can attract investors for further development. And that area would be supported by policies, and it has certain advantages in terms of water, but also the carrying capacity. That would suit the requirements, but also located in an area where the connections to the markets would be more visible, and if there's a potential to impact in those areas that are required. There are several advantages for the developing the agriculture development zones, in that you take advantage of the economies of scale. When you do the environmental impact assessments, the development of the infrastructure, the provision of the services. The first step of the zone is the project Atikulu in KwaZulu-Natal. And Chair Berry, and I'm not sure if I should really read through this because I think it, the projects are just were provided more details, and I'll be guided for yourself, sir. But I would not want to add more unless if you require me to go through all those projects.
The only problem is that we had raised the issue of the document being sent on time. Even when the minister and the deputy ministers were here last time, but we still experienced that problem that we only received these documents on Friday. This would have allowed members to go through this report on their own. But I agree with you that this is a detailed province. We allow members to, rather than you taking them through, that they have to ask questions when it comes to that particular presentation. I will now allow honorable members to ask questions of clarity. Let's start with the first presentation that deal with the regulations and the policies. Yes, Nate, followed by Mrs. Labosati, Honorable Pakis. Yeah, the three so far. Mrs. Smith.
Honorable Acting Chair, I think you're discriminating against us so that you're calling us Mr. and Mrs. and Honorable Pakis. okay, Chief Listen, the first question I have is, I have a study that was done on aquaculture by EnviroFish Africa for the Department of Trade and Industries, which the report was presented in September 2007. And in terms of this report, there was, let me just get down to the right page here. There was predictions made for 10 to 15 years later, which is approximately where we are today. So I want to hear from the department in terms of the projection on jobs and production and all of that. Where do we stand in line with that? And why are we only giving proper attention to this industry while we already had that study before us? The other question I have is, why would the ordinary person, especially in the rural areas where the poorest people stay, which we actually want to empower, farm with fish instead of something like chickens? There have been studies on aquaculture for 35 years already, and that we do a study on the Levensvat, sustainable feasibility, instead of all the technical aspects, so the feasibility of it. And then the price issue as well, because it seems like there's a lot of focus on more expensive types of fish and aquaculture, which is more focused on export markets instead of providing for the 13 million people which has who is not food secure. The other question is, did we look at countries like Vietnam and Egypt that specializes in especially the aquacultural sector? For example, if we go to ocean bars, most of the fish we eat is actually Vietnamese barb. And then the cost for food for fish. The average cost for feeding chickens is 4.50 per kilogram, where fish at this stage is 10 rand per kilogram. In Vietnam, for example, the cost for fish is at approximately 5 rand per kilogram. So did we study that? Right. And then the focus seems to be a lot on saltwater fish, our sea fish does, instead of focusing on freshwater fish, which is a lower technology type of fishing, as well as a cheaper type of fishing. So why are we concentrating on that? Because now we produce basically a product that most South Africans can't afford, where freshwater fish like kerper and mackerel and those are more affordable and easier to work with as well. Then I want to know, in terms of these different projects, what spending was done on each one of those projects this fall, over which period, in detail, as well as the current jobs in the different industries, or how many jobs do we currently have there? And then for which markets are we supplying, are we producing, yes, specifically? So because if you produce something, you have to produce it for a market. So which market are we looking at? Thank you.
Okay. There you also dealt with the second presentation, but I'll allow that everybody should then deal with both the presentations. Honorable Lapusa.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I think some of the questions will be overlapping. My first question is, if I look, and we haven't covered that, but if I look at the research document that has got South African policy developments with regards to aquaculture, and we look at the the things that they
outline in number three, they say a complex, inappropriate, unintegrated, unrelated statutory frameworks and procedures have resulted in failure to encourage the development of aquaculture and in entrepreneurship. That is the challenge. Or that is one of the things. Then I want to know, on page 7 of the presentation, how do we bring that in comparison or in alignment, stating that one of the elements of the strategy was the development of an integrated national aquaculture policy framework. Those two things doesn't gel for me. Or is this framework now that's being developed, is being developed because of the challenges in unrelated statutory frameworks and unintegrated frameworks that the research unit is telling us that is a finding that there's a problem. That's the first question. Then I would like to know that on page 8 you refer to, where is that now? Sorry. Yeah, on page 7 you refer to start the development of the inland fisheries policy. I would like to know what is the time frame for that policy to be developed. And then also I would like to know, according to the second presentation, the 88 zones has already been determined. That includes sea as well as freshwater. Now that zones have been determined, but we're only developing the inland fishery policy now. How can we have a policy that zones already has been determined? Or I just think maybe there's a good chance that I just don't understand it, but I would like to know that. And then I would like to know what is the findings. You refer to a report on page 8, the biodiversity risk and benefit assessment on the alien species and invasive species. But what were the findings of the report, and what is the department, what did they get out of that, and how are they implementing it? It's good to say there is that report, but what did it say? And what is the things applicable to us? Then I would like to know what is the national and provincial intergovernmental forum's status on decision making. Does it have a formal status on decision making? Is it binding, or is it just a forum as set up there to inform and to get the operation and the kind of thing? And yeah, what is the real role that they play? And then I would like to know how many farmers at this moment are in South Africa per province in aquaculture, and how many extension services officers are there at the other personnel, sort of a breakdown of support personnel versus farmers in the country as and all per province. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Takis.
Chair, let me appreciate the opportunity and the input or presentation from the department. But then to start with, Chairperson, I thought you will make a remark that members of this committee were late for this meeting because we are on other meetings, so that we lead by example. Department officials should not think that we don't take them serious, so that they must take us serious. Chair, I want to check if, I mean, the presentation talks about the appreciation by the cabinet on the existing potential for this particular sector to make an impact in terms of the economic development and fluctuation. But now, I should think immediately that was highlighted and acknowledged. There was supposed to be high speed in terms of reviewing the policy regime that governs this particular sector. Because I will ask abruptly that if the law
of 1972, 1965, or 67, 47 is still relevant to the current situation in terms of your own knowledge and view? Because that process was supposed to be simultaneously kicked off to say we acknowledge this and we must review immediately the policy regime. And I want to link that question to the point that says, why are we supposed to appoint a service provider for 24 months to develop a vision? I'm really interested to understand the details there. And the numbers that you attach emerging from different provinces, are these scientific numbers? Or what informs this different job creation, whether indirect or direct jobs to be created in different parts of the country? Your 5,000, your 6,000, your those numbers that are attached there. The last question, did you put a timeline specifically to say by this particular time we must have finished in terms of reviewing the legislative framework? Because that's one thing that you want to start with. The last question, the value chain committee that is being presided over by staff, and it's only meeting at four or three times a year. Can you share with us what is the impact of that in terms of the same brief on the value chain issues if it only meets what times or three times? Is there any impact that you can concretely say this is what the committee is having concretely? I'm interested on that. If we are to talk about the diversification of this particular sector and this development.
Thank you very much. We'll at this stage allow DD Chief and his team to respond to the questions, and thereafter we'll allow members, if they have a second round of questions, to pose DD Chief.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. I'll take most of the questions, and I'm sure the colleagues will add to where I would have missed. In terms of why aquaculture now, if there has been study, Chair, I've indicated that there has been a number of developments. But what we're doing now is to harmonize all of those after following these various round tables. We understand even better constraints that are there. We understand even better the potential that this sector has, and that's why the refocus and the emphasis to grow this sector, both in terms of jobs, in terms of its contribution, and this is part of the bigger strategic frameworks of government, one side on the ocean's economy, but of course contributing to other areas such as food security. Yes, we are considering the fish, particularly as we develop the inland fisheries and inland aquaculture, freshwater aquaculture, for food security. The reason we started is because on the marine aquaculture part is because this is part of the bigger strategy, and PAGISA is focusing primarily on the ocean economy, and therefore marine aquaculture becomes that bigger peg of the ocean economy. But this largely the same constraints in the regulatory would affect the inland aquaculture. And as we resolve the market issues, the legislative issues, that would also enable us to grow in the same way the inland aquaculture. And there are projects in the various provinces
that are dealing with inland aquaculture. Feed cost has been identified too as one of the constraints, and we are looking at the cost of feed, and part of the problem for us is simply because the aquaculture sector is small, relatively new compared to other sectors, and therefore you don't necessarily have the same economies of scale in aquaculture as you have in other areas. And this is what we are looking at through research and various alternatives. But I believe that as the sector grows, and the economies of scale will actually start to weigh down on the cost of food. We're not only focusing on marine aquaculture, we also want to do the same with freshwater aquaculture. I'm sure I've already explained on that. The details on the expenditure of the various project steps that I would not necessarily have yet shared, we can provide that information in writing. The question was why did we start with a project before the policy? There have been, aquaculture has been going on, and as I indicated, it has just been scattered in various areas. We have developed the policy, we have moved from policy further to develop the aquaculture legislation, and I have referred to the aquaculture bill for the policy. That's the first part. But also on the question of inland fisheries, why do we identify the zones? Because there is already some provision, although scattered, people have been working with this scattered legislation, and we want to harmonize this. In terms of inland fisheries, at the moment, the Department of Water and Sanitation, Department of Environmental Affairs, in various ways, are providing a regulatory framework, and we would want to harmonize this, and this is why we're starting with the policy. But why we're doing that, it's not that this is a totally, the policy framework is totally absent, it's not necessarily that, but we want to harmonize it for accelerating development. The status of the provincial forum, at the moment, because in the absence of legislation, it's not necessarily a decision making, but they're more advisory for developments. The information on the number of farmers per province, the number of extension officers, the ratio of extension officers to the farmers, so that we can provide, I will be able to provide those details at this stage. All right. My colleague is advising me that we have a chapter in the aquaculture yearbook which we will distribute to the members, and saying that some of this information is will be available in the book. We will distribute those copies. We brought some copies for yourselves. There was a question on if aquaculture is important, why are we not accelerating the policy, the review of the policy regime? I believe Operation Hargeisa is exactly one of the outputs of Operation Hargeisa in the 6 weeks that we've been developing that, has actually accelerated that. Whilst we are developing certain policy reviews, we have arrangements, even interim arrangements between ourselves and the relevant partners to make sure that the aquaculture development goes on. So I believe that it is given the necessary speed that is required. Why do we need a service provider for any funds? We wish we could get the bill sooner, and that's what we would want to do. But we also recognize that once you've done, well, firstly, there are consultations, and when you consult, you want to make sure in the development of the legislation, you adequately take the various inputs and do the back and forth. But once we're done, we also respect the fact that in developing legislation, we only go up to a certain point, and once the process comes to Parliament, we would want to respect the fact that we will rely on the program of Parliament, and we did not want to be overly ambitious, although we would want to accelerate from our side. The number of jobs that we have shown here, we have actually indicated for each zone what is its potential, and in terms of the approvals that we have in terms of the various authorizations, we would show what the possibility, the maximum of each project would be. But also that we develop will depend also on the funding available, the rate at which it will be developed. We are creating an enabling environment for investors to come in, for those who would develop. We would want to do what government should do. It is not that government itself will develop every project. In terms of the round tables, what is the value? Exactly, the Pakisa has benefited from these round tables because we then understand very clearly from the various stakeholders. Firstly, the constraints that they are facing, the potential, the desires from the various stakeholders in which they want government to intervene. And a number of the documents that I've indicated have been developed. Part of the output comes from those roundtable discussions with the various players in the sector.
So, Your Honor, that's an opportunity to give it to you for me to just comment. As a study that was undertaken by the department, whether the skills can benefit and assessment, those seven species are species that are currently being farmed in the country. However, it became important for biodiversity reasons or the concerns that are there. So that if we want to grow those specific subsectors, we needed to kind of gauge the impact, whether negative or positive, that it would have. So that was done in consultation from the initiation of the process, that in terms of reference with Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. The study was undertaken, and there is a report, and that outlines the areas, that means now outside where it is currently or where the species are currently being farmed, where it could also be farmed, and then what would be applicable measures to mitigate what could be the negative impact. So there is a study with recommendations, but that is still a subject of ongoing discussion between TAF and the department responsible for environment. But the study was concluded. However, there is also another intervention from PIA that also assists in that regard, the alien invasive species regulations. So look, there are a lot of cross-cutting objectives between the two. So they're also being consulted and engaged by the CEDA Department here in the finalization of those regulations. So yeah, that is where things are in terms of that particular, it was a proactive step by the department so that we have some risk assessment for whoever wants to farm with those seven species, then they would know what would apply. But if one wants to farm with an exotic or other species that is not on that list, then they will be subjected to whatever the standard requirements or the risk assessment. Then the last one, Chair, what informs the numbers attached to the fees and areas of jobs? Just to add again, during the last phase of Operation Pakisa, there were permanent industry members who were there. Some of them would be called in. So that they would assist in terms of the projections, whether in terms of jobs, be it during the construction phase or sustainable jobs, like permanent jobs. So those figures are informed by actually by input from the established sector as well as academics in the industry, including the relevant departments that we work with. So that is what informs the potential jobs, but it is informed and the input we got from the members who were part of the process of Operation Pakisa. Thank you, Chair.
I think there was also a question on the international comparison, specifically Vietnam was mentioned, and also the cost of feed for the fish. If you could also respond to that. And also the issue of secretion, you're talking about potential. You don't give us what is the current status in terms of the secretion, not just the potential, but currently what is the situation. But I just say that, is it in the budget? Oh, okay.
So the indeed we have done the comparisons with a number of countries, particularly those that would have the same size or even smaller coastline such as ourselves in terms of the marine aquaculture. And we have done a comparison in that respect, and this is what also informs and motivates the potential that we're looking at ourselves, that the comparable countries, we looked at Egypt, we looked at Thailand, so we have done those comparisons.
There is a slide that talks to the operation targets, but it's not clear, so I don't know whether it's also in the document, because it's talk about the methodology of implementing the plans, and it's not clear, so we won't be able to exactly know those plans, the actual plans for the implementation.
Thank you, Chair. The first slide on operation practice, besides the slide where it is first introduced, my apologies, not all the slides are numbered. The one where the colors that are kind of not enabling us to see the text, that one just outlines the processes at the left, the first week, and then up until the last week, which is the sixth week. So first, the development of lab aspirations. We have a problem statement, then we develop those aspirations, and then there is week two, developing solutions. And then there is prioritizing and detailed solutions. So all members were there, they were split into different groups. Those were focused on projects and initiatives. Then week four and five was developing detailed action plans. You will see the supporting budget, key performance indicators, implementation plans, detailed, very comprehensive, I think more than 400 pages, the report on lab TRO, which was focusing on aquaculture. And the week six was communication, extended beyond 6 weeks, but they continued in the branch to meet almost every 7 days to finalize. So that is the first slide. So that is the information that we brought back to the department and for operationalization. And then the second slide, check. This one talked about the aspirations. Now, where are we, where do we aim to be within the 5-year period? We want to operationalize on the plans, which are detailed, they call them 3-C plans, so that we break it down how and who, when. So the first one, it talked about, we wanted to decide about this sector, that aquaculture in South Africa has shown strong growth in 5 years, with production from 2014 up fivefold to 20,000, now it's sitting at around 4,000 to 5,000 at the current production. So that is what we want to see come the end of this first phase. And then it talks about as well the figures, which my colleague will just confirm now. But we want it to be increased to 50,000, those are permanent jobs, not just the temporary jobs. So as well as the livelihoods in terms of the rural communities. So that is what we want to see in order to gauge the success of this adapted deep fast results from Malaysian government. So the next slide, Chair and Honourable Members, this is the one that talks about what now currently the content that were observed. They were summarized to 9. So we will see the first one, inefficient regulation and government systems. So one would expect to see what then do you recommend in terms of addressing that constraint. That's where the DDG talked about the issue of regulation. And then the second one, difficulty accessing finances. There we have, fortunately, collaboration with the Department of Trade and Industry, what we call as Aquaculture Development and Enhancement Program. It's a 4-5 year program that started last year to kind of boost investor confidence in terms of growing the sector, and that is an ongoing program. managed by the GTI with the TIC department. Then there is also underrepresentation in the sector. So that as well is being identified as a constraint. The list goes on to a limited market footprint. So we have to also create those growing acceptable systems that will ensure our sector products actually acceptable in the market, and is that competitiveness. As we speak now, we are hosting some delegations from foreign countries so that they can come and inspect our systems, so they can see if they would actually recommend South Africa as a country from where they can actually import products, particularly from the fisheries sector. So that is what that side addresses. And then the last one, then, this is the shortlisted interventions summarized to 8. We'll talk about now on each of those constraints. And then this is where now the department for its next 5-year medium-term strategic framework is going to be now. These are our bona fide expression, and then the 24 projects that indicated that are indicated there at the top. We'll break them down now. I like 4 or 5 projects up until we have delivered on the last project of the 24 by year 2019. Thank you, Chair.
Very much. What we're going to do now, honorable members, we are going to allow the Department of Environmental Affairs to make presentation, but we ask the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries to remain, because some of the perhaps issues could be interrelated, and members could still ask questions to DAF. Whilst we also ask the person to DEA. Can we agree with that approach? But if there are also other follow-up questions, honorable members are free to also submit those to the secretary, and then it will be channeled to the department, and they will request written responses to those questions.
Honorable Jefferson, I just want to make sure that we do get the following in maybe a writing form, because it is quite a lot of information. The investment in the different projects over the period, the years, what was spent, the jobs, current jobs on that, and then as well as, what was the other one? Oh, the markets for that, yes. Okay.
Thank you very much. Can we then allow TA to make reservation?
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. I'm Guy Preston. I'm the DDG responsible for biosecurity, and I'm leading the first presentation of a suite of presentations by the department, because it does relate and correspond with what has just been presented by my colleagues from DAF. So the next slide, please. Should I answer there? It does say the draft, the one before.
Sorry, members, my apologies. So I just that the department has brought a revised presentation. We are handing it out now. The one before you no longer serves. They made some amendments to it. I wish to be I brought it out. Thank you.
May I continue? Thanks. In fact, Alf Wolves will just first give some context and then I'll come back if that's acceptable.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. The reason why you've got some additional material here is that what we wanted to do is to frame this debate in terms of the challenges that we face. So the presentations are, and I think that you've already identified in your questions to DAF the issues of fragmentation and the challenges facing this particular sector. So the information that we're going to provide with Dr. Preston will begin with just some overarching operational guidance in terms of the regulatory environment, with in particular with the treatment of alien invasive species. We will then look at the aquaculture development in a what regulatory environment applies in the pre-development phase, or if an existing facility would be expanding. Then we will touch on the authorization environment once a decision to go ahead with the development phase takes place. That then covers general authorizations, coastal water, and leasing, the leasing environment. At the end, Honourable Members, I'd just like to make a comment on the interim measures that we are working with the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries in terms of streamlining in the interim phase, opportunities for streamlining given the absence of a coherent aquaculture policy and regulatory environment. This interim measures would then apply to Operation Pakisa and apply to the projects within the aquaculture development zones and in that streamlining process. So perhaps if we could start with the overall or overarching operational guidance provided by the Alien Invasive Species Regulations. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honourable Members. It does say the draft Alien and Invasive Species Regulations, but in fact they are enforced now, and in the regulations they're dealing with all taxa of all groups of invasives, and we have 559 in fact, because we did not include the trout in the regulations that went through. I'll explain that in a moment. But 559 species that have been listed as invasives in our country. I have given presentations on this before, but this is a huge, huge impact on our biodiversity, on our economy, on food security, on health, and many other impacts. Just the impacts on water have been estimated in the hundreds of billions of rands from invasives. So we're not talking about a trivial issue here. But the specifics that we're talking about today relate to fish and aquaculture, or to also invertebrate species and aquaculture. And the most contentious of these has been trout. So I'll just talk to the trout quickly and then talk more generally. But we have worked very closely with the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries to try to resolve how best to deal with what is an invasive species. So I think to put this in context, a recent study that you might have seen from WWF, it's an international study, but they were estimating that 74% of all fish species, not species, specimens, so the numbers of freshwater fishes, have declined, were declined by 74%, which is just massive. And one of the biggest impacts, of course, is that of invasions and invasive alien fish, so the trout, carp, bass, and various other species, the damage that they are causing. But the position that we've taken is a pragmatic one, that in areas in which species like trout, and if you don't mind, I'll just stick to trout now, the trout have already invaded. The chances of getting them out of the system are minute. and the benefits of getting them out compared to utilizing plants such as for aquaculture, which is the main focus of it, also for fly fishing and the various industries associated with that, make it sensible that we zone our areas appropriately. So as you can see on the left-hand side, we are not listing trout for fresh, and I've just put the rainbow trout, but the same applies to the brown trout, the two trout species that are found in South Africa. It's not listed for freshwater aquaculture facilities. So in other words, they will be zoned as green and they will not be listed as invasive species, but the requirement will be that any aquaculture facility will need to register with DAF. So in terms of what the DDG and DAF has just presented, it's certainly a way of reducing the red tape that might be associated with otherwise species. They are category 2, which means that you can have them, but it is with a permit. In national parks, provincial reserves, mountain catchment areas, and forestry reserves, there are nuances to this that I can explain if people are interested. But I think I should specifically mention that in Ezimvelo, case in wildlife, in the Drakensberg, they do have hatcheries. Those hatcheries will be allowed to continue and encouraged to continue with trout in those areas, despite them being part of the provincial reserves. They are then not listed for green zones, so we are going to zone the country effectively into green and orange zones at the moment. The green zones are where the trout are allowed to be there, but they will be regulated as avian species, just to control the release, transport, and sale of the species. This has been done together with SASAC, the biggest of the various fly fishing and aquaculture interest groups, but also Aquaculture South Africa, Trout South Africa, PADI, and FISAF, the various groups with whom DAF and ourselves engaged. In the orange zones, the areas where they do occur but could be causing a problem, and also areas in which they do not occur, it will be category 2, so they may not be introduced into those areas without a permit, and in most cases that would require a risk assessment being done before we allowed trout to be introduced into those areas. However, it's important to say that that will have no impact on aquaculture itself. As I've said in point A, they are not listed for freshwater aquaculture, and in point E, they're also not listed for saltwater aquaculture. So the rainbow trout is also bred in saltwater facilities as well. So without going on to the conclusion side, which I think is just repeating a lot of this, I just want to also talk to the Mount Tilapia, which is another important potential aquaculture species. Once again, we've met with the interest groups together with DAF and ourselves. There will be a similar requirement of registration of aquaculture facilities with DAF. These are what are called recirculating aquaculture facilities, so the RAS system, the RAS systems, and we are looking at places. The problem with the Mount Tilapia is that it does hybridize with the indigenous Mozambique tilapia. And so particularly in KwaZulu and Mpumalanga, parts of Limpopo and in parts of the Eastern Cape, there's a concern about the introduction into those areas. It might be possible with one of these rare systems where the chance of release is virtually zero if it's in the right basin and done well. But outside of those areas, in areas in which Mount Tilapia already occur, we will also allow further development of the system. Are you trying to hear me out there? So I think on the Mount Tilapia at the moment there is no contestation. In fact, it's been a very positive press release put out by Aquaculture
the Nile Tilapia Aquaculture Group saying for the first time they can really pursue this opportunity. At the same time, I think being very responsible about causing further hybridization problems. And then just finally to briefly mention the bivalves, the Japanese oyster and the Mediterranean mussel. We have agreed also with BAF and with the industry. There has also been a very positive press release from their side that we will zone the areas accordingly. So if you take a base out of Salvana Bay, we've agreed that the oysters are already in there. If you have more aquaculture facilities from this vegetation's perspective, it's not going to make any difference. The invasion will already be there. So those areas would be zoned as green areas for those bivalves, and there would not be a problem from further development of aquaculture. With the mussels, what we're looking at is looking at the stretch of coastline where they have already invaded. There's nothing we can do about those invasions now, so it makes sense for us to exploit this as an aquaculture opportunity. So I think, Chairperson, and also from our side, the way in which we've worked with DAF, we try to ensure that we optimize the opportunities for aquaculture without further causing damage as invasive species, has worked very well, and we have worked well with most of the industries. It's been a tough road with the trout fly fishers, but I think we are very close to a conclusion. So I'd also like to just thank our DAF counterparts for their role and leadership in this as well.
Thanks. Thank you very much. So I've been struggling there, going through the presentation. Some of the issues that you referring to are not in the presentation. It's also not the document that I received before coming here. So I'm sure there have been some changes in terms of the documentation. But I'll allow members to ask questions. Oh, it's not the one. Oh, I did the co-author, so I'm sorry about that.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe to just review, what we are trying to do is to address the three areas of the regulatory environment. The one area was the operational guidance, and this is the new piece that we just talked to now, which is the alien invasive species. So any aquaculture facility that applies across the country would have to comply with this overarching alien invasive species regulation.
Okay.
Unfortunately, we didn't address this particular overarching aspect in our original documentation. But the original documentation from this point on applies. So we haven't. It's not new. So the next piece after the overarching guidance, operational guidance, is pre-development for an aquaculture development. Pre-development phase is the application for an environmental impact assessment, and that application applies to both a new aquaculture facility that's being built from scratch, or it applies to an expansion of an existing facility. Next slide. So, in essence, what we're trying to do, Honourable Members, Honourable Chair, is to take the existing, reform the existing environmental impact assessment regulations in order to make it a much more streamlined and easier to apply procedure. In summary, the listing comprises of three listing notices, and the first listing notice is where a very simple basic assessment would apply. And in essence, this basic assessment, the real dramatic departure is a basic assessment for any aquaculture on indigenous species to that area does not require a full EIA. It only requires a basic assessment. And this basic assessment has also been extended to exotic species, but only where the exotic species operation is below a certain threshold size, where the risks are much more easily managed. The second listing notice is listing notice 2, where a more comprehensive environmental scoping and environmental impact report applies, and these are for exotic species or alien species only, where the scale of the operation is a much larger scale of operation, and the risks inherent with those larger scale of operations need a more comprehensive assessment. The third listing notice is how small developments below the threshold levels, how small developments are treated in specifically identified sensitive geographic areas, so estuaries and marine protected areas and those kinds of geographic zones which are applicable. Next slide. I'm just going to go through this. The basic assessment for applicable to alien species as well as indigenous species, this basic assessment is divided into finfish, crustaceans, reptiles, or amphibians, where the lower threshold is 20,000 kilograms. And the upper threshold would be less than 200,000 kilograms. Another category is mollusks and echinoderms, where the lower limit is 30,000 kilograms per annum, and the upper limit is 150,000. And the third category is aquatic plants, where the lower limit is 60,000 kilograms per annum, and the upper limit is 200,000 kilograms per annum. Also, next slide, there's a further category of sea-based cage culture of finfish, crustaceans, reptiles, and amphibians, and sea-based cage culture of finfish and so on. And these lower limit is 50,000 kilograms per annum. And in the case of exotic species, an upper limit is of 100,000 kilograms. Next slide. This just details limits for where an expansion of an existing aquaculture facility. It's the same limits, 20,000 kilograms, 30,000 kilograms, and 60,000 kilograms respectively. Next slide. Now, listing notice 2 deals with the more comprehensive scoping and environmental impact report, and these apply only to exotic or avian species, and it applies for large facilities. So in the case of finfish, crustaceans, reptiles, or amphibians, anything exceeding 200,000 kilograms per annum. For the mollusks and echinoderms, and these sea urchin things, is 150,000 kilograms or more, and 200,000 kilograms for aquatic plants. Next slide. Let me just move to the next slide, those details. Listing notice 3 is how one treats with smaller operations, less than 20,000 kilograms per annum, in particularly sensitive areas. And there are three areas identified as particularly sensitive: an estuary, a protected area, or an area or areas on the watercourse side of a development setback line, or within 100 meters of that, where no setback line has been determined. So these are just some of the pre-development phase regulations which apply, which we've been trying to simplify. I'd like to just move on quickly to Yazid, who would present the legislative policy around the development phase. So once the pre-development phase has been authorized,
then the development phase and what regulatory environment currently applies to developments. Jansita, if you could.
Thank you, Alpha. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Once again, good day to all the members. Honorable Chair, I think there are a few slides that we have before you, and those slides apply specifically in the case of what you would call marine aquaculture operations. So, just by way of the background, and it was mentioned earlier that there's quite an intense debate during Operation Patisa around the challenges that are facing the sector, and of course several projects, I think specifically 24 projects have now been identified for implementation over the next 5 years to boost the contribution that the aquaculture sector could have in terms of GDP, job creation, and so forth. So just by way of a background, we know that there's approximately just under 200 functioning marine and freshwater aquaculture farms within the country today. I'm told that approximately 36 of those farms are actually marine aquaculture farms, so that represents about 24% of the total functioning farms or the total production that we are seeing to date. We have heard earlier that a lot of the production is small scale, and there's quite a strong desire that's been coming through from the sector to grow itself, to a point that we would see levels of around 20,000 tons being produced per annum. During Operation Pakisa, there were several pertinent issues discussed within the aquaculture lab. Two of those are of specific interest in the context of this discussion. There were two specific initiatives that were proposed at Operation Pakisa dealing with the regulatory environment. There were issues of reform that will now be taken forward in the next legal reform that will be taken over the next few years. There's also the issue of permitting, which has been quite an issue of intense discussion during Operation Patisa. The aquaculture lab has proposed that there now be an interdepartmental authorization committee established to streamline the application processes and the kinds of authorizations that now have to be issued for those 24 projects going forward. So, as a department chair, we've taken note of a lot of the points of discussion that were had during Operation Pakisa, and we obviously stand ready to participate in the process going forward in terms of us dealing with the regulation and permitting issues. What wasn't mentioned before, Chair, is that there was, in fact, in recent years, done the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries conducted a legal audit, a review of all the legislation that is currently having implication on the sector and its growth. It was quite a comprehensive report that was produced. The report touched on several aspects, and you will see on the slide before you that even the issues of environmental impacts, permitting and so forth was also looked at as part of the legal review. In terms of the legislation applying to marine aquaculture operations, there are essentially two statutes. The one is the Integrated Coastal Management Act, and the other is the Old Seashore Act that deals specifically with the issue of sea-based leases. So there are two issues that those two pieces of legislation are addressing as far as marine aquaculture are concerned. The first is the disposal of effluent into coastal waters. The latter is the issue of leasing of sea space, which my colleague, Mr. McDowell, will talk to shortly. I will focus specifically on the issue of effluent disposal. Under Section 69 of the Integrated Coastal Management Act, there are provisions for either a general authorization to be issued by the department or a coastal waters discharge permit for anyone who discharges effluent into the sea. And obviously, aquaculture is one of those sectors. We have various types of effluents that are being disposed of into the marine environment. We did, sometime since 2012, we invited all the sectors that are currently discharging effluent into the marine environment. We invite them to apply for what we call the coastal waters discharge permit. In a parallel process, we also developed a guideline to provide all sectors with information, pertinent information that they need to be aware of in terms of what we would require as a department in order to issue those permits. That national guideline was published in 2013, And if I may just touch on the key aspect of the guideline is the fact that it advocates a uniform approach to how we would evaluate applications for the disposal of effluent into the sea. It sets forth various criteria that applicants need to consider, the kinds of information that must be presented to the department, the kind of specialist studies that would have to be conducted before an operator could obtain a permit. However, in the course of that process, there were some concerns that were raised by the marine aquaculture sector. There were some who, for instance, argued that the effluent they disposed into the sea is less problematic than the effluent from other sectors. So that concern was noted. There were some who argued that the approach within the guideline is far too stringent, and if I could state it loosely, there were some who felt that the guideline is a bit of overkill in terms of the requirements that that we are putting forward to the various sectors. So the concerns were taken note of, and we as a department have now embarked on a process where we are developing a methodology, an approach that would enable us to assess applications on a sector-by-sector basis. So rather than to have an approach where we subject all applicants to the same type of requirements, we will now try to respond accordingly by taking into account the needs of every specific sector. And we believe that that particular approach would have some advantages going forward for how we attend to applications from the marine aquaculture sector. So considering the situation we are in terms of the current status quo, there are the general authorizations that in theory we can issue as a department, and then there are the specific discharge permits that we can issue on an operator-by-operator basis. We were then asked to look at two options to improve the authorization processes. The one is to issue a general authorization for either the sector as a whole or for specific subspecies in the sector, coupled with some norms and standards. In other words, a general authorization that would also make it clear what the limits are that we would apply to every sector. The second option is for us to continue implementing or issuing coastal waters discharge permits, but for us to do so within a reasonable time frame and with reasonable conditions. Now, it has turned out that the option of general authorization seems to be the most attractive one. And indeed, it was a key point of discussion during Operation Pakisa. The challenge we have is that there are no formally established norms and standards applying to the sector. There are draft standards for abalone and trout. The advantage of having to follow a general authorization route is that we would then lessen the burden on ourselves in terms of having to administer individual permits and to conduct compliance monitoring and enforcement on a permit-by-permit basis. So it is a view that the general authorization approach would assist us in doing away with potentially a lot of unnecessary administration. And it would also allow the sector to simply follow one authorization with limits and requirements or conditions that apply to everyone within that particular sector. But as I've said earlier, the challenge we have is that there is a need for government to develop norms and standards for all these species that are being farmed around the country. So as matters stand, we have around 21 individual applications for discharge permits. Those are being screened at the moment, and what we are proposing is that we continue to issue those permits until such time that we have put in place the relevant norms and standards for the various species. There are other species that are being proposed, such as oysters, mussels, salmon, and so forth, and we don't have standards or norms that could assist us in the way we manage the growth of those species going forward. That's the proposal, that we will continue to issue coastal waters discharge permits until such time that we can put in place general authorizations. And I would now like to hand over to my colleague, Mr. Mudau, to talk to the issue of leases.
Thank you, Chair and honorable members. I'm not going to spend much of the time, it's just only one slide that just addressed the issue of leasing of the aquaculture facilities or infrastructures. Then the reason why we do have the leasing, maybe before I said more about the Fisheries Act, is just better management and the coordination of our coastal public property so that we may not have a sort of any impact in the CPP in prevention of the public to access the coastal public property. And in this case, we do have the Fisheries Act, which is currently
managing the leases in the seashore area, and of which I duly agree with the colleagues from DAF that it becomes more a bit frustration when you have all those lot of regulations which at the end of the day you need to comply with when running this exhibit of the aquaculture. So in this regard, apparently the process as it stays, it takes about 6 to 8 months, sometimes even a year, to get that lease for leasing the aquaculture facilities, and that the process at this moment needs to be approved or ratified by Parliament. But by noting that, you would realize that this is not indeed an easy approach that would actually be made simple in our colleagues. And as such, as a department, we have now considered or we are now moving to what we call the integrated authorization system in order to reduce this multiple authorization. So in the or upon the signing of the ICMFB, which is now present before the president, then we are just going to phase out those areas of leases through Seashore Act, meaning that the process now would be simple, would be simplified, and would be part of the integrated authorization system. So I think that is all about that area of the Seashore Act. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Just to wrap up the presentation, I think Honourable Raboskati asked a question as to how the aquaculture development zones would operate in the absence of an overarching policy, and I think it's a very valid question. And exactly the same challenge faces the Operation Pakisa 24 projects. Exactly the same challenge faces the strategic integrated projects, because the fundamental challenge, irrespective of whether it's an aquaculture development or it's a strategic infrastructure development, is the challenge of fragmented legal and regulatory systems. So what the Parliament did in the last sitting in the face of these challenges is to develop an interim measure, an interim streamlining measure for environmental authorizations, which would then apply irrespective of what kind of development we're talking about. So what the National Environmental Management Act now provides for is for a wide range of tools. The problem that we face with the environmental impact assessment tool is that it's a very site-based assessment tool, and it doesn't deal with the issues of cumulative impacts across the region and across multiple communities. So it now applies for a wide range of other tools like strategic environmental assessments, environmental management frameworks, standards and norms, risk assessments. These tools are specifically designed for particular kinds of development applications. What the Act provides for is two things. The first is that on the basis of the other tools, like a strategic environmental assessment, the Minister may identify a zone where the environmental impact assessment and other authorization requirements could be delisted or alternatively excluded or alternatively exempted. And the Minister can, on the basis of these, do that. So how does this apply? Oh, the second provision that the law now gives is that if Parliament and the Cabinet has identified a national strategic priority project like Operation Pakisa 24 projects, or like the Cabinet will adopt an aquaculture development zone,
then the current the competent authority for issuing those authorizations can revert to the National Minister of Environmental Affairs. So instead of working with nine provincial NECs, you would, in the case of these national priority programs, would be working with a single minister or a single competent authority. The minister then has the capacity to put together a multidisciplinary authorization team, which has been proposed in the case of Operation Pakiza, and for that program would then be able to issue harmonized authorizations on the basis of not EIAs, but a much more useful tool like environmental impact assessment. And in that context, would be able to then harmonize the issuing of a water use license, for an example, a coastal water discharge license authorization, a general authorization, an EIA, all in one process. So it's an interim measure, but the tools are now in place to enable Operation Pakiza's 24 projects to be assessed as a program under the National Environmental Management Act, where the minister would then gazette those 24 projects as a national priority, and she would then become the competent authority to handle authorizations of that. Similar applications could apply for the agriculture development zone, for example. So just in answer to Honourable Labatakhti's question, that this interim provision has already been passed by Parliament. It was developed by the last Parliament, and it was assented to on the 2nd of June, by the President, and is now in force. So we have the at least the interim legal provisions to accelerate and cut through the red tape, if you want, for these specific nationally identified programs. I just wanted to, I thought Honourable Labatakhti, the question was maybe not answered fully. Thank you.
Thank you very much. At this stage, we will allow members to ask questions for clarity, but I would like to also request the departments to be brief in their responses. Where possible, responses should be then in writing where detail is required. Thank you. Over to the honourable members. Honourable Smith, Honourable Labus Kachni. Yeah. The choice of the honourable Smith.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Okay, I've got two questions. One reflects back to the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. Okay, I'm going to start with that one. On the note, tilapia that was also indicated as possible agricultural fish, I understand that there's some problems in terms of water temperature and where it is viable or not. There were some projects started on this with some investments around the Eastern Cape and Free State around there, where the water wasn't warm enough. So just in terms of that, the department look at the viability of that specific species as well. Then my other question is to the Department of Environmental Affairs, what is the stance from the department on specifically the two species that I named earlier, which is the kerper and the makreel for agricultural use? Yeah, that's basically it.
Thank you very much. My first question would be, is there any indication of the time frame for establishing norms and standards for the other species, not only for the abalone and trout? And then I would like to know on the coastal water discharge permit that you explained very well, I need to know, are those permits then will only be authorized on a national level and also on a provincial level. The interim and in the end how it will work. And then thank you very much for answers, for the clarity on the question on the policy and the legal framework. Do I get it then right that the question that I want to ask is then only programs of national strategic value that then will be assessed as a program under the new legislation, or just in the interim period, or could a province also establish a strategic or a priority project, and how it will that thing be treated?
Okay, any other questions? Can you sit on your hand and ask the question?
21 operators, who are those 21 operators that you spoke about?
Okay, can we have a response there from, let's start with DAF, because there was a question that was specific to DAF.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and thanks to the Honorable Member for the question. Please advise if I got the question right. The issue of funding with tilapia with tilapia being a limiting factor. Water temperature. That we have had cases whereby we would proactively caution a study, for example, in the Sahara area to do some risk assessment to check first the biological feasibility, taking into consideration the biodiversity concern of farming with some of the species, including tilapia, for example. Where it's clear that in terms of biodiversity concern, could be farmed, but the problem now becomes the temperature. Is there actually commercial availability in farming with such a species when, for example, during a certain period in the year where the water is either tough or is too high for such a species? We do render technical advice to the would-be farmer that it is not advisable for the purposes for which one wants to actually undertake the activity to farm with such species. However, bearing in mind that this is actually aquaculture also entails animal husbandry, whereby an investor has the technology to manipulate this, that which is which could be a limiting factor for commercial viability of an activity. Then, if they want to test the theory, then we unfortunately cannot, at the department that is pro aquaculture development, stop the farm, but we do advise accordingly. The site selection and the species selection, and that could be limiting if one wants to farm in a particular area. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'm going to begin with Honourable Labakakni's question and request Guy Preston to answer the stance on the Kuruka and Makriel, and Yazid, if you can pick up the question on the time frame on norms and standards for other species, and the question on questions related to the coastal water discharge permit, who are the applicants and at national versus provincial level. If I could begin with Honourable Labuschagne's question. No, the answer is the province can use these regulations for provincial. It's provincial strategic programs as well. Generally speaking, the national minister would only become the competent authority where the program crosses provincial borders and more than one NEC is involved. Otherwise, the competence lies with the provinces. So, if there's a program that is wholly within the province, then the NEC. Responsible which would implement the provisions of the law. So these interim streamlining provisions apply for all competent authorities identified in terms of the National Environmental Management Act. The challenge, however, Honourable Al-Bakhti, is when a particular program requires harmonisation of authorisations at local government level, so things like an air emission license which is issued at the local government sphere,
at provincial level and at national, like a water use license, that challenge then is often preferable for the national minister to be declared the competent authority, because the national minister can then harmonize the multiple legislation if that's half of the objective. However, in the case of aquaculture, one that doesn't perhaps require, well, you would still have a problem because you've got a water use license, which is a national competence and not a provincial competence. So I'm sure that the cooperative processes in terms of the provisions for cooperative governance could apply. So certainly a province could apply these provisions to its own provincial priorities. Guy, perhaps on stance on that, Mark Field.
Thanks, Alf. I think maybe just also to give some clarity that the invasive alien species regulations, it is the national department that is the issuing authority and competent authority, and the provinces work with us in terms of ensuring that what is done either in issuing authority terms or competent authority terms is in accordance with their needs. But because of the nature of invasives, it is a national competency. Specifically around the Kirpa and the mackerel, or in fact any alien fish, alien also mean an indigenous fish outside of its natural distribution range, there must be a risk assessment and permit if it's introduced into an area in which it does not occur. But in areas where they do occur, they are not a listed species, they're not a listed invasive species, and therefore there would be no control over required in terms of the invasives, the alien invasive regulations themselves. Again, Alpha suggests there are other aspects that need to be considered, but not that rule. Thank you,
Chair. The odd answer, questions answered.
Yes, Edith, if you could pick up on the coastal water, the two coastal water discharge questions.
Thank you, Chair. It was, I believe, a question around the issuing of the discharge permit authorizations, whether there's been some consideration to potentially issue those at provincial or local level. Unfortunately, as the law stands, it's exclusively national, so those permits will continue to be issued by the Department of Environmental Affairs. On the issue of norms and standards, I would imagine that since we do have a draft norm and standards for abalone and trout, the next step would be to have those approved by the minister. I'm not precisely sure how far that process is, because it was in fact initiated by the Western Cape, but I do believe that it's nearing completion in terms of we are almost there in terms of having a formal norm and standard in place for those two species. Then I would guess that the next question would be, well, which is the next species that matter most? And on that issue, I think there would be a need for some discussion between the department and DAF to identify specifically which species then to focus on. But I think the development of a norm and standard could take anywhere between 6 to 8 months, if you consider the kind of scientific research that would have to go into the process. So it potentially could be less than a year, but I think the first step would be to identify what is the next best species for which we need to have norms and standards in place. The question on the operators, the 21 applications we have at present are in fact mostly, not exclusively, from the Western Cape, and it's for abalone farms operating within the province.
Thank you, Ram. So I don't know if there are any other inputs or not. Okay, let me take the opportunity to thank the two departments for coming and briefing us on the progress, the policies and the legislations, the achievements and the challenges in the aquaculture sector. We would also like those questions that are still to be responded to in writing, if we could have them by Friday this week. Again, thank you very much. But we want to also insist that when departments come before the committees, we would
like the ministers to be part of the committees, but if there are any policies, but at least the director generals must be also present. We have observed that the DGs normally attend these committee meetings when the ministers are here and give the impression that they only have respect for the ministers, not for the committees. So we want to insist now that if ministers or whatever reason they are not able to attend, we would like to see the director generals being present in the committee meetings. Thank you very much for the attendance. We'll be monitoring also the progress in terms of the challenges and constraints, particularly the implementation aspect of it, the methodology that will be used out of operation practice. Will be also interested to know. We will also be interested to have some of these reports that you mentioned, particularly those that you commissioned for particular parties. If we could also have those reports so that we can monitor implementation of the recommendations of those commissioned reports. Thank you very much. Meeting for the department is adjourned. We'll request the members to remain because we still need to adopt the minutes of the previous meeting and make some announcement about the oversight business that we are to conduct. Thanks. Thank you very much. Honourable members, the next item on the agenda now is the adoption of the minutes of the 15th September. Can we go through the minutes for purposes of adoption? We start with the corrections or omissions, if there are any. I'll go page by page. Page 1. Page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5. Page 6 and page 7. Can we have a mover and a seconder for the adoption of the minutes? Honorable Sim.
Chair,
seconder, Honorable Masango. So, minutes have been adopted. Oh, I'm reminded that Honorable Masango was not in the last meeting. So we cannot then second the adoption of minutes. Honorable Packet is seconding.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. The last point is just announcement, Honorable Members, on the oversight visit that will be undertaking to Gauteng Province. We are not going to delay you, but the office is finalizing the arrangements, all the logistical arrangements, and the information will be emailed to you when next day or two. So, those details will be forwarded there to yourself. But the office will be auto-conducting you in terms of your flight arrangements and all the other personal arrangements. Thank you very much. I'm glad you are invited to lunch. It's coming, so if you can remain. Yeah, it's coming, yeah. Thank you very much. Meeting is adjourned.